This is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick on Twitter at OldFLA and visit his website, rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Florida Spectacular. This week, Rick and I have a special guest. Rick, since this is your friend, why don't you go ahead and introduce him?
Well, Stacy, I hope I pronounced your last name right. Matrazzo, is that right?
Yes, correct.
She joined the Florida Wildflower Foundation in 2015 as its program manager. Before that, she worked for the foundation for several years as a contractor. She's the co-author of Native Plants for Florida Gardens, which she wrote with botanist and restoration ecologist Nancy Bissett. I hope to trade books with her someday. We had talked about that, and it's just a matter of me going by her house and dropping off my book. She has a great native plant landscape in her front yard, and they have an Instagram page that documents. And do you guys have a special camera for that? Because you always get really tight, great shots.
Craig. I can't take any credit for it. My partner Craig does all the photography, and it's all from our iPhone, his iPhone.
It's great stuff. You mind if I share the address with her?
No, he'd love to get more followers.
It's Noble Gardens, right?
That's Noble Native Gardens.
Noble Native Gardens. Look for it on Instagram, and it's amazing the amount of variety you have in your yard and the amount of cool critters you get in your yard.
Yeah, the diversity we've seen since we put the landscape in is incredible. I was just talking to him this morning. I think he's documented over 100 different types of insects, butterflies, bees, wasps, all kinds of really cool stuff. Never mind the birds and other wildlife that we get. And we don't have a huge landscape, so it's really amazing. If you plant it, they will come.
So, Stacy, let me ask you, you are in the Orlando area?
Yes.
All right. So Orlando has a pretty a good program. I think a few years ago, weren't they even working on planting in some areas of Orlando edible landscapes in the Hell Strip? There were some neighborhoods I knew that were doing that, the Hell Strip being between the sidewalk and the road. So I always think of Orlando as being far more welcoming to native landscapes than maybe some other communities. Have you had any experiences where neighbors maybe didn't love what you were doing, or people wanted to see a more traditional European garden?
Not in my neighborhood. I live near downtown. I'm just south of the East-West Expressway, so we don't have an HOA or any regulations. No one is forcing us to do anything different, but we haven't heard anything negative. That's not to say there aren't people who are walking by who don't like what they see. But when we're outside, and we spend a lot of time outside because our landscape is so inviting to us. But most of the people that come by, they're intrigued. They want to stop and ask questions, or they'll just pass by and say, "Hey, I love what you're doing." I think it's different. We don't have on the street that I live on, we don't have others who are really doing this. So it also kind of stands out in that way. But we've done a good job of a mix of kind of a wild landscape with also a little bit more of an intentional look to it. So people understand that we're doing something. We're not just letting our landscape go. But yeah, we've gotten really good reception.
Yeah, we ripped out our turf grass when we bought the house. While we don't have all natives, we do have a lot of natives, and we get a lot of people walking by who, you know, respond to it very positively. And I know we had Andy Furman. I don't know if you've read his book, Bitten. It's about him becoming a Floridian and changing out his landscape. And when he was on the podcast, he shared that the same problem that we have is that you occasionally get this one neighbor who really just, they want a specific type of look. But I too am fortunate to live somewhere where there is no HOA. Florida Wildflowers, that's what really caught my interest. And I was so excited when Rick said you were going to come on the podcast, because Florida Wildflowers are beautiful, but a lot of people don't understand that you can order seeds. You know, you don't go to Home Depot and get these seeds. You can, you can get them. And we've ordered the packets. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we partner with the Florida Wildflower Growers Cooperative, and it's a group of farms in Florida that grow wildflowers for the purpose of harvesting seed. I think the co-op was started to provide seed for the Department of Transportation because they do a lot of seeding of roadsides, but they do have a commercial market. I don't know if you'd call it that, but they do sell to the public, and they have a pretty good diversity of seeds. A lot of the seeds that you get at the big box garden centers are from ecotypes grown outside of Florida. So even if it's a plant that grows here naturally or that's native, if it's grown in Colorado, for example, which is where some of our milkweed seeds come from, they're acclimated to very different conditions. So even, you know, when you bring them into Florida, they don't perform quite as well as seeds that were grown here in the state. And they also can, you know, hybridize in some ways or cause not hybridize with the same species, but you know, you're mixing genetics of the same species from other parts of the country, different ecotypes, and that can kind of change the behavior of our native species too. So it is really important if you're purchasing seeds to understand where they were harvested from and really try to buy seeds that are from Florida, that are grown in Florida.
So you mentioned something, and I know Rick, you said you wanted to talk about it too. You mentioned milkweed.
Yeah. We've started talking about this, and I just went out to my yard this morning and I have non-native milkweed, and there's at least three large monarch caterpillars on it. And, you know, I love those guys, but I know it's the wrong thing to do.
Yeah. So are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
We're about to go for it. The monarch is, it's this charismatic butterfly. It's everyone knows it and loves it. It's recently added to the endangered species list. So, everyone wants to save the monarch, and that's really great. But it's endangered because it's host plant milkweed, and milkweed encompasses a lot of different species, but the host plants are being lost largely to development of the habitat in which it occurs. So, you know, again, everyone wants to save this charismatic butterfly. It's fantastic. Everyone's hot on planting milkweed, but the most available milkweed species, the one that people seem to be planting everywhere, is tropical milkweed. And it's got the multicolored flowers generally, although sometimes you'll find varieties that have more of that kind of gold, orangey color. It's available in just about every big box garden center because it's easy to grow. It grows really fast. It recovers quickly when it's been eaten by the caterpillars. And so, you know, all of those reasons make us go, this is exactly what we need to do, is plant this milkweed for our monarchs. But it's not native to Florida, and it presents a host of ecological problems. So we at the Florida Wildflower Foundation do not recommend using it. And I can tell you all the different reasons that we suggest you not use it. One is that regarding migratory populations. So we have in Florida, South Central and South Florida, we have populations of monarchs that are non-migratory. They tend to be here all year round. But in North Central and North Florida, our populations are migratory. And that's part of their life cycle. They need to go to other climates to breed, and it's a natural part of what they do. But in our native milkweed senesces, so it dies back in the fall and winter, which means it doesn't have foliage. There's nothing for the caterpillars to eat. The monarchs aren't going to lay their eggs on it because there's no food source, and that signals them to move on, to migrate. But the tropical milkweed, the non-native one, is evergreen. It tends to bloom year round. And so that can confuse the monarchs into sticking around through the winter and breeding when they should actually be migrating to warmer climates where they're safe from freezes. So that's one issue. another issue is the presence of a parasite that has evolved with the monarchs. I'm going to butcher this scientific term, but it's called Ophryocystis electroscira, I think, better known as OE, which is a lot easier to say. But monarchs carry this parasite and they leave it behind on milkweed plants, all milkweed plants, when they nectar and when they lay their eggs. And then when the eggs hatch, the caterpillars eat the plant that has the OE in it. The tropical milkweed, again, it's evergreen. It doesn't die back. And so the native milkweeds, when they die back, the OE dies with it. But the tropical milkweed, it doesn't die back. So when the caterpillars emerge from their eggs, they eat the plant, they're consuming the OE, the parasite, and then the parasite increases or like accumulates in their bodies. So they can tolerate a small amount of it. It's natural. But if they accumulate too much, it causes problems for the monarchs when they complete their metamorphosis from caterpillar to butterfly. So mostly it's when they come out as a butterfly, they can't open their wings, which means they can't fly, and then they ultimately perish. So the native milkweed, again, that dies back. And so any presence of OE dies with it. When the plant regenerates in the spring, there's no OE. So, you know, again, it's better to have the native because you're not contributing to that cycle, whereas the tropical milkweed persisting as it does, you're just continuing that cycle of laying eggs on contaminated plants, and that threatens the livelihood of the butterflies.
So what's the best kind of milkweed to get? I mean, what's the best varieties? I've tried several varieties from the native plant store that I go to, which is Green Owl Gardens in Groveland, which is a great source for native plants. But I've only had luck with, it's either swamp milkweed or aquatic milkweed. The other ones have all died out. You know, they do well for a while and then they get, you know, chewed up and then they're gone.
They're not easy plants to grow. If I could pause for a second, because there are a couple more issues with tropical milkweed. If I leave here with nothing more than convincing you and your audience not to plant it, I will have done my job. There's two other issues with tropical milkweed. We've now seeing indications that it has the potential to become an invasive species. Again, it's easy to propagate. It reseeds readily. So we're starting to see it in natural areas where it absolutely should not be because it's not native. So we may soon see it listed as an invasive, which by definition means that it has caused or is likely to cause alterations to the natural ecosystems. What it doesn't mean is that it will be prohibited from sale. We don't have any laws in Florida prohibiting the sale of anything deemed invasive, unless it's on the noxious weed list, and that's a whole other, lots of red tape there. So that's another issue. And then the final issue, and this applies to any plant that you purchase at a big box garden center, is that it may be treated with systemic insecticides. When these stores want to sell you butterfly plants or, you know, well, particularly butterfly plants, but any flowering plant, they want it to look beautiful in the store, so you'll want to buy it and bring it home. So they treat it with these insecticides that are not just topical, but actually get into the structure of the plant and keep pests from eating them while they're in the shop. But you bring them home with the intention of providing food for butterflies, and you may not even realize that what you're actually bringing home is poison to them. Labeling's getting better, which is great. We're starting to see plants labeled as free from systemic insecticides, but we're still in the early stages of that too, and of educating the general public about it. So to your point about Green Isle Gardens or any nursery that specializes in native plants, you don't have to worry about that issue. You don't have to worry about mislabeled plants or them being treated with chemicals that, you know, you don't want to bring home. But to get back to your question, and that's all my soapbox on the tropical milkweed. We do have 21 species of native milkweed, but there's only a few that are commercially available. The pink and white swamp or aquatic milkweeds that you mentioned are really, I think, the easiest to grow, but they do require consistent moisture. For drier areas, we have butterfly milkweed, which has an orange flower. It's a low-growing, sometimes even woody wildflower. And it's the one that's most often confused with tropical milkweed because the flowers do look similar, even though the leaves and the plant habit are very different. But the tropical milkweed, when you pop that leaf, it has visible sap, and the butterfly, the native milkweed, does not have much sap, if any. But they're not easy to grow, which is the problem, and which is why you also find that they're not as readily available to purchase, because it's difficult to propagate them. And so the supply is low because nurseries, there's a high demand for them. And then nurseries are also struggling to grow them. There is some research being done on techniques to better propagate them that we hope will allow more plants to be on the market soon. But right now that kind of remains to be seen. But if you moist area, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I want to stop before we get too far afield of a few things you said, because I've got questions. Specific questions about things you said, and I'm losing the thread. So let me just interrupt you for a minute. It almost sounded for a minute there like you were saying it's not beneficial to monarchs to plant any milkweed, tropical or native, in Florida because they need to be laying their eggs someplace warmer. Is that correct? Should we just stop?
No. We just don't want them here over the migrating populations. We don't want them here over the winter. So we still want to plant native milkweed, especially in Central and South Florida, where the populations tend to remain all year. Their breeding cycle is different, and they don't need to, you know, to leave to complete that. But in North Central and North Florida, we want native milkweed, but we don't want it blooming and evergreen year round to keep them from moving on.
Well, I'll tell you, in my experience, that is absolutely not a problem with any milkweed because those damn caterpillars strip the damn thing bare. I had to stop growing milkweed because it was actively stressful to me because I would plant the milkweed, the monarchs would come, they would lay their eggs, the cats would hatch, they would devour everything, and I would go into a frenzy going, oh my God, they're going to starve to death. So I would go buy more milkweed, I would plant the milkweed, and then more monarchs would come. It was like this expanding, I don't even know what it's called, but it was the more I planted to feed the cats and they just eat it all. And I finally had to give up because I felt like I was killing them. I didn't even really understand the tropical native dilemma, but milkweed never lasted more than one life cycle of a caterpillar for me. Cause those damn things, it was like that Eric Carle book, right? The Very Hungry Caterpillar. I get it now.
It's true.
Actively stressful for me.
I have to say I've gone to a plant store just because I thought my caterpillars were hungry and, you know, plopped down $8 to get another milkweed because I thought they would starve. So guilty as charged. And of course it was the tropical milkweed because that's what they have at most plant stores. That's your only choice.
It is. And I totally feel that, but we would recommend that, you know, you not plant anything other than planting, rather than planting the tropical, you just not plant anything. And I get it though. We've had some monarchs on our tiny little butterfly milkweed plant and it's like, okay, I hope there's enough food for everyone. Unfortunately for us, we have other pollinators and wasps especially that will eat the caterpillars. So that's a whole other stress.
Oh, gosh.
You know, seeing that happen. And we just have to, you know, do the circle of life. supposed to happen.
You're making native gardening sound very stressful.
It is. It's like a war zone out there if you think about it, really. And Rick, you said something before we started taping. You said you kill native plants? I'm assuming on purpose because it's really hard to do.
No, I have a high attrition rate. You know, the whole thing is the right plant in the right place. Yeah. And it's, you know, and your soil types, and I never have any idea what kind of soil I have. It seems like I have different soils in different places in my yard. And then things happen, like, you know, the neighbors next door cut down a giant live oak without asking the city. And the lighting conditions changed in my backyard overnight. And I wasn't prepared for it. So, you know, the good thing is I was able to grow vegetables for the first time, which aren't, you know, I had sweet potatoes, which was fun. But, you know, some things that were there that shouldn't be, you know, what I do well at is non-native porterweed, which,
no,
you know,
that's invasive.
It's horrible, Rick. Even I know this.
But it's, you know, it makes my pollinators so happy. I have tried the porter weed, the native porter weed, and it just is not the same.
So let me stop you. When you say you're planting native plants, you are planting native to Florida plants, right?
Like yes, yes, I am.
Difficult to kill.
And not my experience. Nature. Not my experience. Craig gave me some Rouge plant, which has done very well. And the beautiful bright red berries are everywhere in my yard, and I love them. I wish more birds would take advantage of the berries, but it seems like if there's camphor trees nearby, that's like the low-hanging fruit, and they're going to go for the camphor trees. And there are a lot of those.
Unfortunately, that's an invasive species too.
I know.
They do love the fruit.
Have you thought about a nice holly tree, Rick? I mean, honestly, holly grow where you are, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have some yaupon, but I don't have really room for any more trees. So we're talking pollinator friendly, you know, plants with flowers is generally what I go for. I have yaupon, holly, you know, I've got cypress trees, I've got live oak trees. I'm kind of treed out at this point. There's no room for any trees. But I have good trees.
The holly, you can prune it and keep it as a shrub. We've got two because we have a pretty small landscape, and we've got a small stand live oak and then a giant oak, and I'm kind of treed out too. But
yeah,
you have some of those shrubs that can be trees but can also be maintained as shrubs, and that's nice. But we have a couple yaupons as well. And they do flower. They are attractive to small bees and other tiny pollinators.
Yeah, I had some great little flowers on it last year. It's kind of over in my corner where the pipe vine lives, which again, I know it's not native. I can't win.
I don't feel like we should have had you on this episode, Rick. I feel like
I've been misled into thinking that Rick has a native landscape when it sounds like he doesn't.
I mean, at least I'm up front. I know my banana trees are not native.
I have a mixture. I have a mixture, and I have a plan. I hired Evolving Landscapes, the company out of DeLand, to come up with a plan for me, and I've been integrating more, but some are still non-natives. The pipe vine, again, you know, the caterpillars love it, and it's the spiky ones. Are they for gulf fritillaries or what are they for?
No, I think it's a swallowtail that's a host plant for.
Spice bush swallowtail, is that it?
Maybe.
Yeah. And they're everywhere, all over the leaves, and they have the coolest flowers. And again, I'm like, they're eating. I'm providing habitat. Are they bad too?
Let me ask you a question, Rick. Would you give your child Doritos and go, well, he's eating?
Well, I don't have a child. And
Probably a good thing.
So, I do believe there is an invasive pipe vine. So depending on which species you have, you might be committing yet another plant crime.
Don't let the plant police near my property. So this is the Dutchman's pipe or calico flower. It just grows. It hasn't produced any offspring that I'm aware of because it's kind of a mountain in my side yard. It created great privacy on the hellscape that is my neighbor's yard. Mm-hmm. They nuke it every 2 months. They have no living things other than trees in their entire yard, and no one lives on that property. They just come in with Roundup and destroy all. And so I don't want to see it. So the pipe vine is a green mountain, basically, with caterpillars on it.
when we bought our house, my husband, we live about a mile from Bay Beach, and he wanted a sand dune. I'm like, it's not going to work. So we hired a landscape architect. And she says, okay, well, I've got a truck in sand. She says, what do you want to plant in it? And he goes, well, sea oats. I want sea oats. And I'll be damned if those things aren't growing strong. And it's a nice wall. I don't think it would work where you are, Rick, because you're inland and you don't get a lot of salty humidity. But it does have a nice wall against everything. It's taken about 10 years, but it's filled in really well. So, you know, you just got to find something that's a little bit more... look at me giving you advice. I'm no expert, but you've got to find something that's a little bit more friendly to the area. I mean, there's tons of stuff in Central Florida you can grow that I've looked at and I know I can't grow. And if only you had a friend who was an expert who could help you. I feel like this turned into a plant counseling session.
I wasn't looking for this. I was not looking for this. I do have some quirky stem that is doing okay.
Yes.
But it doesn't flower or give me fruit. It just kind of grows on the vine.
It might flower and give you fruit and you just aren't seeing it because it's really tiny. The quirky stem has a really small flower and a very tiny fruit. We have a lot of it. It just showed up in our yard. We didn't pick it or plant it, but we're letting it do its thing because we've actually got gold fritillary caterpillars on it right now.
Oh.
Yeah.
We get some interesting stuff in our yard, and I'm assuming it's bird borne. Like, we had something that my plant app ID'd as a watermelon that just never got any bigger. And so I finally cut it off the vine that I didn't plant and cut it open, and it's a squash. So, I mean, you know, stuff ends up there. And I feel like if the birds bring it, I'm not going to, you know, we've gotten sunflowers we didn't expect. Let's go back to the Florida Wildlife Growers Cooperative. That's floridawildflowers.com, right, Stacey?
Yeah, the Seed Growers Cooperative, yeah.
No, we've bought wildflower seeds from them before, and we've been pretty happy. And we're about to sow some more in. Do you have any advice for people who are looking to add some flowers to their landscape? And I ask this because people who are new to Florida will rush out and buy azaleas and Gerbera daisies and plant. And I watch my neighbors do this, and I feel like I don't want to be that person because my yard is just a jungle. And I feel like going over and going, you know what's going to die, right? Like, think about this. But so what would be your advice for people who were looking for, I hate to say, a pop of color, but they want flowers in their landscape and they don't want to wait for a vine or a bush to grow?
Well, I would first say maybe start with plants and not seeds. And that's not to discourage anyone who wants to start from seed, but I'm impatient. So I don't like to wait for that to happen. And with wildflower seed, you do need to make sure that you prep the ground properly. And depending on the seed, there's different things you can do. And we have a great resource on our website that would help people learn how to plant or start a wildflower garden from seed. But I really think that just buying a couple of plants, we have an incredible amount of native plant diversity in Florida and a lot of really cool things available at native nurseries. I think a real easy, like kind of no-brainer wildflower is tropical sage, which has red tubular flowers. It attracts butterflies, bees, even hummingbirds. It flowers spring through fall, even year-round in Central and South Florida. I've got it in my yard and it has never stopped flowering, but it produces a ton of seeds. So if you have one, you have or will have a lot more. In our yard, it produces so much that we end up pulling them and potting them and giving them away to friends and neighbors.
Is there a non-native variety of that too? Or, I mean, how can you tell? Because I have it everywhere.
Why are you look?
please.
He wants it for his yard.
No, I have it everywhere, and it does reseed. It's prolific, and it's one of the things that does well here. But I'm not sure if it's native or not.
I hate that in the space of 30 minutes, we've taken you from being so excited about this to now assuming everything in your yard. I'm sorry.
No, I do have some good stuff. I have basically a Kunti grove because Kuntis for me are very easy because I pick up the seeds and I just throw them on the ground and, you know, they grow. And I go on my walks and I just pick up Kunti seeds and throw them where I want them to grow. And they do very well. And today I actually noticed that I have duck potato down by the lake that's blooming and beautiful. And that's a native plant. So, I mean, I have good aquatic. I have alligator flag. I have, what's the purple one? Pickerel weed. You know, I have good stuff down by the plant. I have Virginia willow. I have some good things that are doing well, but I have some not good things. So is there a way to tell if the salvia is native or not?
If you're buying it from a native nursery, it's going to be native. That's the best advice I have. I don't know if there's one that looks quite like it that is not native. There are some non-native salvias, but that red one, the tropical sage, I'm not sure of a non-native lookalike. We do have white and pink varieties, which are native. They're They do these variations do occur naturally, and so our nurseries are breeding them for that characteristic. And I've actually heard, although I haven't practiced this myself, but I've heard if you plant a white one and a red one, the offspring will be pink. I've purchased all three, so I don't know if they're doing that on their own or if it's just a, you know, the ones that I planted, but it is a natural variation that occurs.
I have a white one that I did not plant, so it got there somehow, and it's very happy and beautiful. They are beautiful flowers. It's so interesting, and maybe it was Craig who told me this, because it looks like when the bees are on them, they're not at the opening part, because it has a very small opening, and so they get on the top part.
They puncture it. They're called nectar robbers, and the bees will actually puncture the base of the flower and extract the nectar that way, rather because they can't fit into that smaller tube.
It's amazing. Of course, the thing that I have the most of, you'll probably make fun of me for this, is Biden's alba.
That's a great plant. Everyone thinks it's a weed, and I know it proliferates so much, but it's the third most reliable source of nectar of all of the plants in Florida. It's very important to the honey industry. It's just a great plant. And I give space to that in my landscape. I don't let it run wild, but I try to encourage people to keep it. It's edible too. You can use it yourself. Doesn't taste that great, but.
We used to yank it out. I used to spend hours yanking this stuff out. And I told the story on the podcast before. But we went up to Fort Clinch State Park and we were camping there. It's up in the northeast corner of the state. And we took our bikes on a bike ride because it's a beautiful park to bike. And there was this field of Bidens. And it was beautiful. And my husband and I just looked at each other. He goes, I guess we should stop killing that. And we let it fill in. And it really, I mean, especially we have a pool. And I would sit in the pool and watch the bees. And we had green bees, we had honeybees. And they loved it. And but we had a friend over who he was sitting in our pool. He goes, I can't even look at it. He's like, it's behind me and it's stressing me out. How do you leave it there? And I said that, like, but the bees love it and it's native and it's not a weed. And it's got very bad. I mean, it's got a very bad reputation, but it really is. If you have the chance to sit and watch bees on it, you'll never want to rip it out again because they're so happy. Yeah. They're just happy little fat bees.
You can mow it and it'll come back and it'll come back with more flowers. Like it's just, it's a very versatile plant. But yeah, I try to encourage people to keep it because it's incredible for pollinators.
Yeah, I think it has a bad reputation because the seeds are, you know, I try and cut the seeds because I don't want them all over my clothing. You know, and you bring them into the house. And that's the thing I really don't like about them is the beggar takes. Some people, are they same as Spanish needles?
Yeah. I mean, common names are, you know, are kind of, there's several plants called Spanish needles, for example.
Okay.
But yeah, beggar ticks, Spanish needles. I've heard it called monkey lice. I think it all, you know, attribute to the way those seeds look.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a really easy fix. Wear shorts so, you know, it's easier to clear and take your socks off before you walk inside.
And your shoes, because it sticks to everything.
Well, I hate shoes in my house, but so.
It's a whole nother podcast.
That's a whole nother podcast. And that has to do with terrazzo floors and another very Florida phenomenon. And Stacey, you've been great. We're running out of time. And I'm so glad you came on here because I love Florida wildflowers. But I want to ask you another question before we let you go. So a lot of people listening to this podcast, we've talked a lot about going to a nursery that sells native plants. And I don't think it's that easy for some people. You know, unfortunately, we're very much a Home Depot, Lowe's, Ace culture. Is there any resource that people can go to find wherever they live in Florida, a good, reliable native nursery? Is there any website or resource where we can point them to?
So it's the Florida Association of Native Nurseries, and their website is plantrealflorida.org. And they literally have a map of Florida and all of the native nurseries, even landscapers and maintenance people, anyone working in the native plant industry. It's all on the map. So you can just look where you live and find what's near you.
And we will, of course, have all these links in the show notes. So, and that's a fantastic resource that if people don't realize, you can break it down by county or zip code. Yes. And we have a couple in our area that are just invaluable. And I always tell people too, go to your extension, your cooperative extension, and they can help you. They aren't necessarily about natives, mm-hmm. but you're a master gardener, aren't you?
I am not a master gardener, no.
But you are a master. Well, forget
master
it.
Master naturalist.
The master naturalist.
Ah, okay, master naturalist. But you can ask and they will help you find native plants, even though our extensions are not exclusively native. They are school things.
And we are always here to help. If I can give a plug to my foundation's website, it's flawildflowers.org. We have tons of resources on how to choose plants for the right conditions in your landscape. We have over 300 profiles on native species. We have information that'll help you start a wildflower garden from seed or, you know, other things that you can do in your landscape. And we just have a wealth of information. And we're here to help too. If people have questions, they're welcome to email us and we do our best to answer them or get them to the people who can help if we can't.
Fantastic. Stacy, thank you so much. This is so much fun to talk about flowers and plants.
Thank you. I love
this was great. I love the being bombarded by all my plants I don't have. I just want to add to another resource is a lot of places, at least here in Orlando, like Mead Gardens and Lou Gardens will have plant sales. Mm-hmm. Where there will be people from the native plant chapters. The native plant chapter here is the tar flower chapter, but they will sell native plants. So you can go to the sales they have a couple times a year and get native plants there. So watch out for those. You can find information about those on Facebook and places that have events. And I know I've gone to the ones at Mead Garden several times and bought plants there because going all the way out to Groveland, that's a big commitment and their hours are limited. So I can, you know, it's an hour drive.
But it's worth it too.
It's worth it. It is so good. It's such a great, it's my happy place. It's so beautiful. And there's butterflies I've never seen anywhere else. They're just, you know, being happy there. So, well, I would love to do this again because I have so many more questions and, you know, I just love the abuse that I can get here. So we have to do it again.
Well, thanks for having me. I'd be happy to come back and talk more about what you're doing wrong in your landscape.
Thank you.
I'm just kidding. I'd love to come by and, you know, if you want to talk about what's going on in your yard, I'd love to, you know, give you some of my thoughts. How about that?
All right. Sounds good.
That's a friend.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Stacy. Rick, you better get out there and start digging stuff up right now.
I'm working on getting rid of the porter weed as we speak. Because they had grown to tree size.
All right. Well, folks, we will, of course, be back next week with a fresh new episode about something exclusively Florida. We thank you for joining us. And Stacy, again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a great week.